listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
We are two guys, one cup.
It is Monday, April the 15th. Everyone relax, this is Two Guys, One Cup, an AFL-adjacent podcast. My name is Will Anderson.
And my name is Charlie Clawson. And Will, often our Western Australian listeners feel neglected on this show. So let's start by talking about WA. When I want to talk about WA, I want to talk about a Victorian who's living in WA.
For the moment. Harley Reid.
Harley Reid.
Come on, Harley. When are you coming back, Harley?
Well, I actually am taking a different tact because I am looking at what, you know, that kid can do and the excitement he's generating. And I'm wondering, like, how good could it get for Harley in WA? Oh. How big?
Well, he's already – I mean, the stat this week was something like he's already been on the back page and front page of the West Australian like 29 times or something, I think was the number that was being bandied about. But even – I mean, think about that. Just think about the idea. Go back to you being 18 years old, right? Because that's what he is at the moment. He's about to turn 19 years old, Harley Reid. Go back to you at age set. So where's Charlie Clawson at 18 years old, about to turn 19? So you've had a year of being 18. Where are you in your life?
So I'm just finished a year of university. I'm working in a video store. Yeah. I'm still catching the bus to uni, I think. I didn't have a car at the time.
How would you feel if you'd been on the front or back page of the Herald Sun 29 times at that point of your life?
Well, I guess it would depend on what else is coming with that because, like, fame on its own is no good, but fame with some perks, well, you know, you can talk me around it. Is a car dealership saying, hey, Charlie Harley, would you like to drive this brand new sports car for a year? Or we just want to put your face in a couple of ads, social media posts. I would probably be open to that. If a few restaurants are saying, hey, Charlie Harley, you know, you don't have to eat like a, you don't have to eat a butter chicken tikka. Because it's the only thing you can afford at lunchtime. We'll get you some good, you can have a nice table at this restaurant. I could probably live with that. If girls are probably paying a bit more attention to me because they've seen me 27 times on the front and back page of the West Australian, I think it would be, there would be some perks to it, yes.
Okay, so how do you think your university studies and video store work would go if suddenly all these perks started coming your way? Suddenly that you're getting the best seat at the Indian restaurant rather than your takeaway butter chicken. Suddenly you're riding around on your branded Charlie Davidson that you've done a deal with. Like girls are lining up. It's not just the videos that are easy down at Video Easy. You know, you're getting all the attention. How much would you be able to concentrate on your actual job at
Pretty,
that point?
Not very well. Not very well. No. I mean, especially if, like, if the things that are being written and said about Harley on the front and back page of West Australian are all good. I mean, it might be different if it was like all bad or at least 50-50, you know, like there's some people who weren't quite on it. But because it is a rock star attention, then it would be pretty hard to keep your feet grounded.
Well, the good news is we know that that can never go back the other way. As long as if people are being universally supportive of you, that is a position that they will absolutely take forever in whatever circumstance.
Well, I can't remember when Chris Judd sort of burst onto the scene, when he had those four games in a row, you know, as a 21-year-old or whatever, was it, and I know social media wasn't around at the time, but was it a similar kind of fervour in the mainstream press? Because I can't quite, I came to Chris Judd a bit late. I only really sort of took notice of him around 2005. But was it a similar kind of fervor?
I'm only speculating because I wasn't in Western Australia at the time either. But I think when Judd came along, there was a group of West Coast players who were like young guns. Mm. So I think probably it wasn't just all down to the idea that Chris Judd would be their savior or Ben Cousins would be their savior. There was a whole bunch of those players of around that generation. Secondly, I think the Western Australian media was mostly confined to Western Australia at that moment. So whatever was happening, it was like that little secret sauce that would happen when you would fly over the border into Western Australia when you're like, oh, you guys just do your own thing over here.
Well, I mean, don't you reckon case in point to that is the fact that even though the Eagles have been going through this real, like, you know, flat patch for the last 18 months, their games are always really well attended. Like, whenever you watch a game on a Sunday, it's never like you see a half-empty Optus Stadium. Like, they'll go no matter what.
Mate, the Bulldogs, after winning the premiership, couldn't draw the crowds that the West Coast Eagles could draw after not winning a game for 3 years.
I mean, on that point, we did put a call out, or we asked a question on the last episode about what is the rivalry like between Freo and West Coast now that the Eagles are no good and Freo look to be a good team. And we've actually had a couple of people write in. So normally we save the letters to the end, but I thought this is our Western Australian special, we're calling this episode.
Yeah, I mean, anything that avoids us talking about the Bulldogs and the Saints, we'll be happy to lean into today.
I've got them right down the end of the run this, don't worry. So let's hear from, this is from Sarah, who's a Freo fan. She wants to say two things. Firstly, I'm a Docker supporter. We don't have a chip on our shoulder about the Eagles in that Melbourne-Sydney sense. It's a deep-seated two-way hatred, and there is only one circumstance in which we put it aside, if one of the teams gets into a grand final and is playing against a Victorian team. Okay, so we sort of speculated that might be the case.
Yeah, that the hatred of Victoria supersedes. Eventually, you come together as a state against the other states. As mostly the Victorian teams, I think, do when there's a Victorian versus an interstate, but I don't think it's as big a thing.
Yeah. I mean, I do think it is interesting, though, that Sarah is a Freo supporter and she's saying, oh, we have this intense hatred of one another. I think we'll wait to see what the West Coast Eagles supporter says.
Yeah, this feels like it might end up being one of those real Sydney-Melbourne rivalries in real life, where Melbourne talks about Sydney all the time and Sydney is vaguely aware that Melbourne exists.
Her second point is, it's obvious that you two are doing this podcast as a way to justify to your partners and family that you'll be watching every game of footy all weekend, all season. Clearly, Sarah, you're new to the pod. Often we have not watched a game at all on a weekend.
I mean, part of the justification is to watch the minimal amount of football that we do watch on a weekend. Yeah. So I think in essence that is partly correct. Like, would we be watching even less football than we're currently watching if we were not doing this podcast?
Definitely. Okay, so this is the Eagles' perspective. This is from Scotty. Having listened to your last episode of Two Guys, One Cup, the question was asked how the Eagles members feel about Freo doing well, and let me offer my insight into this. As a 14-year member and lifelong Eagles fan, I've had some incredible memories of our four grand final wins, more than the Bulldogs and St Kilda combined. Okay, thanks for the drive-by, mate.
We knew that. We both knew that. In fact, I can guarantee that both Charlie and I were thinking four. Oh, my God, that's more than us combined without you having to actually say it out loud.
I still remember back in 2006, I was living in the UK and I had to get my mum to record the grand final on VHS and then send it over to me in England. Luckily, having no Facebook or Instagram in 2006, it made it a lot easier not knowing who won. So for 3 weeks, I waited for the video to get to me, not knowing who won, and built the suspense of watching it. I think that's amazing. Like, I know it's 2006, but it's not like it's 1886. Like, surely there would be a way. I mean, I know you're deliberately avoiding it, but I would have thought it would be impossible to avoid it for that long in 2006.
If you must have not run into another
or spoken to your family
or time, right?
Yeah. So I waited.
Yeah, because that's amazing too, by the way, that was only 2006, because when the Bulldogs won their first premiership, I just had to wait another 2 years for television to be invented. So
Scotty continues, I waited for my best mate to arrive to where I was staying, as he'd been traveling around South America. So I went to the train station to pick him up and had a whole afternoon planned to go home, get drunk and watch the game. Just as the doors of the train opened, out stepped my mate, and the first words out of his mouth were, "Mate, the bloody Eagles won. Fuck me." All right, so back to your question. About 4 to 5 years ago, there was a clear divide. You think you can come to our state and take over our footy fans? Get stuffed. It feels like now there's a bit of a shift amongst Eagle supporters. While, yes, the derby, not derby, still divides the state, when it's Freo playing other teams, the majority of us would rather see Freo win than a team from Victoria or Port Adelaide, which is very oddly specific. With having four premierships ahead of Frio, and whilst I can't speak for all Eagles fans, I would much rather see Frio win the premiership than a Victorian team, knowing that they will likely never catch up to our tally, and neither will the Saints at this rate. I mean, Jesus Christ, Scott, like, what's going on here? What did we ever do?
It felt a bit harsh for the Saints to get not one but two drive-bys on that one.
In saying this, I would rather Frio win than any Victorian team. But let me give you a quick list of the most hated clubs by all West Australians. Okay, so Scotty, as a spokesperson for Western Australia.
Oh, Scotty.
And other Western Australians, you know, if you want to add to this list or amend it, please, twoguysonecupafl@gmail.com. Okay, number one most hated team, can you guess? Not a Victorian side.
Not a Victorian side. Number one most hated by the West Coast Eagles. It's got to be Sydney.
I would have thought that too. They don't even make the top five.
Really?
Yeah.
But the grand final.
I know. That's what I would have thought. Maybe there's a begrudging kind of respect for the Swans.
Okay, so it's not a Victorian team.
No.
But they're hated by, is it Port Adelaide?
It's Port Adelaide. I mean, I need more info on this. Like, what is the history?
Yeah.
Scotty, if you could write back in and let us know, like, a brief history of the, is it, what is it? I was going to say Matthew Pavlich, but that's he was a Frio, South Australian. What's the issue with Port Adelaide?
What is the issue with Port Adelaide?
Is it just because they're like proximity, like they're closer to Perth, and they're rough, or is it go back
is
to the
Port
waffle
Adelaide,
days?
Is Port Adelaide closer to Adelaide than to Western Australia than Adelaide? Like statistically, like on a map, which one's closer? Is Port Adelaide closer or is Adelaide closer?
All right, who's the second most hated team? This is a Victorian side.
A Victorian team, Collingwood.
Third,
just on the general principle that everybody hates Collingwood, sort of thing, I think.
Third most hated. And this is, he's saying for all Western Australians. So this is Frio and West Coast combined. Yeah. So I guess maybe the Port Adelaide. I don't know. Well, let us know, Western Australians. Okay. Third most hated team?
Victorian team?
No.
No.
Follow the same line of thinking.
That they're a hated team by everybody.
Yeah, but like just follow the same logic.
Oh, Adelaide. Is it just Adelaide?
It's Adelaide.
Just the closer they are, the more we weigh.
I mean, I feel like Scotty has an issue with South Australia. I mean, I find it hard to believe that all of Western Australian footy fans hate Port Adelaide and Adelaide.
Maybe is there something in the old Western Australians? Did they have traditional rivalries through their competitions?
That's what I was wondering.
Though, because
state level footy, right?
Yeah, that's right. So maybe SA and WA do identify as traditional sort of rivals.
Sandgropers versus Crow Eaters.
Whether the Waffle or the Sandful were the best sort of other teams, like, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Did Polly Farmer get, like stolen on a big contract to, like, the Sandful at some point before he went to Victoria or something like that? It'd be one of those kind of legendary, you know, as a footballer, a Waffle guy who kicked, like, 300 goals in a season or something like that but never played in the VFL/AFL. There'll be some kind of a contract dispute there. Okay, fourth most hated club, and I don't know that this is, well, apart from you, I don't know if this is anyone's most hated club.
Melbourne, really?
I mean, that to me, like, would make sense just from the fact that it's Melbourne, right? Like, because it has Melbourne in the name. And then the fifth.
I would say maybe it's just because it is that the Melbourne thing, like you said, the Western Australia, it's Melbourne, just it represents Melbourne in general. Is there something about the fact that, is this a, I'd like to know where Melbourne were pre-2021 grand final, because I think for Western Australia, there must have been something that rubbed it in their faces a little that they actually had the grand final in Western Australia.
Right.
Those teams have gone over there. They've got to play at their beautiful stadium.
One of your members has violated our COVID rules and bloody snuck into the state.
And it was Melbourne who got to celebrate in all those personal clubs where it should have been Harley Reid and, you know.
We like winning at all Victorians. Okay.
Who
do you think is the fifth most hated side?
You said Sydney wasn't in the
Sydney's
top five.
Sydney's on the top five. There's another Victorian side that I'm like, I can sort of understand people hating it, but it's also, I don't understand why it's specific to Perth.
So, okay, so that indicates it's not the Bulldogs, because the West Coast and the Bulldogs used to have quite like a vicious rivalry. So I was thinking maybe they were still holding on to that, but I don't think that's what it is.
No.
Hawthorn.
What's going on there? Is it just because they've been so successful?
I think so.
And their mascot is also a bird?
Yeah, I think so too. I think it is. I think that the West Coast Eagles think of themselves as being the Hawthorn of the West.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. Or that they are, kind of in a way, in terms of their history, yeah. How many flags have won, been around for four decades, four flags, that kind of fits in with the Hawthorn strike rate. In saying we hate all Victorian clubs, though, that's simply not true. There are a few clubs we would like to see win a flag sometime soon, including Kangaroos, Saints, Bulldogs. We do, because they do have a soft spot by Western Australians. I think that's true. I think we have quite a big supporter base in WA. I think it's just a bunch of people who got out of Victoria. But, well, that's interesting to know. And I do remember when I went to see the Saints play the Eagles at Subiaco, I was treated quite well, even though I was sitting in like the Eagles members. But it was much more of a patronising kind of way that I was like, you know, I was a Make-A-Wish kid or something like that.
I mean, I've got to say my previous experience, despite what we hear about the, you know, the Western Australian crowds, every time I've gone over to do shows, the West Coast, like, you know, fans and community always extend an invitation of like, come to the game, like, come along. They actually seem very welcoming to, you know, to a Bulldogs supporter and a Bulldogs fan. And listen to Trap, which I always secretly suspect it is. Yeah. They're just catfishing you to get you there. And then they're going to pull down your pants on the big screen and bully you.
Well, I guess, like, I'm just fascinated by this Port hatred and where that comes from. I mean, I guess that's been exacerbated after this weekend, after what they did to Freo. I mean, poor old Freo. Like 2 weeks in a row, you look like you got the game sewn up. I haven't lost any respect or doubt their credentials any further. I mean, you can't really, because it sort of feels like the Carlton thing was a just a roll of the dice. And this one, Port looked like a very, very good side. It was a great game. But that midfield that Port Adelaide have, holy shit. Like, they're so good. They are so good.
They're good in a way that you'd have any of them. Like, if you were offered any of them, you'd happily take any of them. But if you were offered that you had to pick which one to take, okay, so that's your question. Like, do it just from a St Kilda point of view. Mm. They say to you, we've got to get rid of one of these Port Adelaide midfielders. We've got ourselves in a massive trouble salary cap-wise. We have to sell you one of our players. You can choose any one of the midfielders that you would like. Who do you need at the Saints out of that midfield?
Jason Horne-Francis, definitely. I think he's got I think they're all great, but I feel like he's a little bit younger, so you're going to get like more bang for your buck. And he kind of, like, you got like Connor Rosie, who's like the kind of Rolls Royce, just like all class. And you got Zach Butters, who's kind of like your grunt. And then you got Jason Horne-Francis, who seems to be a combination of both.
I mean, it's just, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't know from day to day. Last season, I definitely would have said Zach Butters. Mm. This season, I reckon I'd be tempted to say Connor Rosie at the Bulldogs. If we, like, I think, you know, just the class and skill and speed and just, yeah, but I mean, but that's what I mean. They're just incredible.
Mm.
And then there's like Willem Drew, and like they've still got some other.
Yeah.
Like Ollie Wines still plays.
That's
for,
right.
For
that Forgot about him. I think, you know, I'm going to have
Brownlow medalist Ollie Wines.
I think I'm going to have to reevaluate my assessment of Port at the start of the year, which is like they are a good side, but I just can't see them going all the way. I feel like they've improved. Like they've drafted well. They've traded well. And they're actually, because they have been thereabouts, like Geelong. They know what to expect, and they've got a bit of that kind of fire, like Brisbane a bit last year, you know, on a mission. There was a great exchange. I'm not sure if you saw it at quarter time. They played the vision of Ken Hinckley and Charlie Dixon having like quite a vigorous discussion at quarter time. Clearly, Ken felt like, you know, Charlie wasn't maybe playing his role for the side, and Charlie was kind of explaining these kind of things. It's a really animated. But you're watching it and you're just thinking, how many Farkins do you reckon are coming out between Ken Hinckley and Charlie Dixon? Like, that's got to be a world record for Farkins, don't you think?
Yeah. You guys seem like you were in quite an animated conversation down on the boundary line. Oh, to be honest, 95% Farkins. like only about three or four key points that we managed to get across. Just general, if you were doing one of those word wraps, it'd be Farkin in red in the middle and then just defense punching.
Yeah, it was awesome to see. And Charlie Dixon, who like I was joking about last week, looking so kind of bashed up and injured, you know, just kicks not the sealer, but the goal that turns the game. And I think I'm a bit fascinated with Charlie now. Like I thought that maybe the last 12 months he's just been, they're just hanging on because they don't have any other options. But maybe he is essential to that side. Like maybe that kind of big physical intimidating presence, even if he's only good for a goal or two goals a game, like maybe that's key to what they do. And maybe that's why Ken was getting so angry at Charlie for not just like, mate, your body's falling apart. Please just throw yourself into the pack and let the ball spill for our elite midfield.
Yeah, you've got a job now and it's to hurt yourself on behalf of the rest of the skillful players. We've decided that we're not going to get any trade value for you and we can't get rid of you yet because we can't afford a new one. So what we're going to have to do is just drive you until you fall apart.
I mean, it's a big weekend for Adelaide. I mean, the Crows get their first win of the season over the Blues, which was another – I mean, look, we know it was a round of close finishes, but that game especially was so exciting. Like, you know, always has a chance to win at one end and then he doesn't, and then the sub comes on for Adelaide and wins at the other end. Really satisfying. Will, it was a really satisfying watch for me.
Well, you know the thing about the Carlton aspect of it, though? I think this is good for Carlton because if Carlton kept winning these – if you win the close ones all the time, I do think there is that element of – you think, oh, we're doing great. We're on top of the ladder. We keep winning games. But maybe, you know, it is that thing of it, the ball can bounce the other way and a team could have won and you could have been like lost four of those games. Mm. So I think losing one occasionally is actually good for Carlton because it keeps their eye on the ball and they don't lose anything in credibility. They're still a pretty good team. This is one of those ones where I'm almost like, oh, I reckon this works in Carlton's favour. If Carlton has a big plan for how this season's going to go, just losing a close one like this at this time of the season is almost the perfect thing to happen to them at this time of the season, just to sharpen them up.
It's funny too, like, you know, how the narrative on a team can change after one victory. Like last week, Adelaide were no good. They've been drafting into a black hole. David King attacks them and now it's like they've got their season back on track. And I'm like, but can you when like you've won 20% of your games and your season's back on track?
Well, it's just the way they played, right?
Because they're changing things up.
You're like, yeah, you put Rankin in the middle a lot more. They look a lot more dynamic, you know? And so it's interesting though, because can they sustain what they did on the weekend for the whole rest of the season? Like, it's not how they play and it's not how their key players who normally play in the midfield play. But obviously they're a better team when they're playing in that more dynamic fashion, which is what people have been calling for.
And the fact that they won on the road, I think that was the other big kind of mental hurdle.
Yes, but also let's be honest about what the big difference was. Rankin.
Yeah.
If Isaac Rankin can play that well more consistently, they will win more games of football. Mm. If he doesn't, they won't. The end.
And so
I'm David King. That's my take.
I mean, I caught up with Adam Zwar during the week as a big Blues fan, and I was asking him about why are you guys being so quiet at the moment? Why are you being so humble? Yeah. And he said because there's a real sense among Blues supporters that this is all an illusion because I missed this. I'm not sure if you caught up with it, but I think it was Kingy again, or maybe it was Joey. Statistically, Carlton aren't actually playing that well. Like if you look at them in certain categories, they are actually, and I don't know what they are, but it's like, you know, specific categories which indicate a team is like playing good football or winning. They're actually not. Like I think there was one stat about.
Yeah, well, we've looked at transitions from the back pocket over to the halfback flank, which we've all decided is the most important damaging statistic in modern day footy.
Well, there was one about Cripps where it was like Cripps has the lowest percentage of like first hands to effective disposable, which I'm like, how the fuck do they measure that? But it's like, so 60% of the time he gets the ball, he hits a target, like getting it out, but the rest of the time, that's incredibly low for like a starting midfielder. And I'm like, is that indicative of like a false dawn though? I mean, they're still winning.
Yeah, imagine if you could get up to 70% or 80%.
Like, it'd be incredible. Let's also talk about a team that broke the drought, and that's the Lions. Absolutely smashed the D's. One on the road. Again, people are talking about, okay, they've got one, two in a row now, so their season's back on track. No one knows anything, real. This is what I'm saying. Like, all these predictions.
Did you just call me real, by the way, just for the record? Real?
I think. Yeah.
No, nobody does know anything.
Including me.
You knowing my name.
Real, listen to me. But this is another classic example of, like, the Lions get written off and then they win two games in a row and suddenly they're back.
Yes.
Like, if Hoiny says round seven, I'm going to go, critique his expertise, but if Hoiny says round seven, I'm going to say round 10. I'm not going to jump on or off any team until another five rounds. I feel like this is, seven's still not a big enough sample size. I want to wait till round 10 before I decide who's going to make the finals.
I think that might be the most sensible thing you've ever said in
Thank
the history
you, Real.
Of this podcast. I'm just keeping it real. It's a new direction for comedy festival names of shows for me.
If I could
just change my name to Real. I agree with you. Nobody knows anything. And the competition is so close that there are not a lot of, like, lock games. There's certainly, once teams are closer together on the ladders, there's always potential for an upset from week to week. It seems very difficult to perform at your best over a consistent period of games to get a real streak on at the moment. So, yeah, I agree with you. Like, who knows, like, what is going on? I don't know what's going on.
Well, you know someone who definitely doesn't know what's going on, and that's Chris Fagan. This was him at his post-game press conference. Is there anything
else? Sorry, I can't, because there's someone making a noise out there. I can't hear what you're saying. Sorry. Who is that? Can we get that person? Tell them to be quiet. Sorry, I can't. Sorry.
No, you said that you got a big...
Thanks, everyone. Sorry I couldn't hear you. Blokes out here. Plus, I'm, you know, 63 and I can't hear properly anymore. Just an old bloke. Yeah.
If that is not the perfect, like, distillation of Chris Fagan, just like, and when you see the vision too, like, he's got that real Grandpa Simpson energy where he's just so annoyed that, like, you can hear voices out in the corridor talking.
I can't hear anything. But also, when I was watching that, I was like, that is classic old person hearing, because as you get older, like, any external noise, you find it harder to hear in, like, environments where there is, like, external noise. I'm already noticing that myself. And I was like, yeah, that would be so distracting when you're trying to answer questions. There's somebody out the door. But then at the end where he's just like, I'm an old man. We are two guys, one car.
All right, I know you didn't want to talk about the Dogs, but I think we have to. It's a shame that they couldn't get a win for Bevo's farewell game, but we move forward. Dude, there is a screenshot. I'll see if I can get it. I have never seen a coach sweat like Bevo was sweating in that last quarter. Like, they kept cutting to close-ups of him in the box, and he is like pouring. It's like that Keen Peele meme. Like, he's just pouring with sweat in that last quarter. Like, what's going on, Will? What is going on?
Well, I mean, the Bulldogs are a factory area. They're also a CNC music factory area, and they're going to make you sweat. Yeah. It's fine. Charlie.
Yeah.
Look, I'm very conflicted at the moment because, genuinely, in my essence, I believe that Bevo deserves the chance to coach this team, right? Like, as you know, in my lifetime, up until the point where Luke Beveridge started coaching the Bulldogs, I had never seen my team play in a grand final. Since he's been coach, I've seen them play in two. They won one. They were up at halfway through the third quarter in the other one, right? Mm. Like, that's a level of record within my lifetime that it's very hard for me to be too critical of the person who has delivered me that much success based on anything that has become previous. And the idea that you would give that person up to try someone else or something else seems, you're like, well, it never worked with anybody else.
Yeah.
This is the only thing that has ever worked. Like, why would we be so quick to rush on? But there just are so many parts of what he does and how he does it that just make it so hard to understand what he's doing sometimes. And you want to believe. Mm. Like, basically barracking for the Bulldogs and trying to believe in Bevo must be what it's like to be like a Trump fan or a QAnon supporter where like every time a new fact comes out, you've got to find some way to argue. Or maybe it's closer to the people who believe that Elon Musk is playing 4D chess with Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, like that every move he makes, even though it seems like it's not going in the right direction, is some masterstroke and you're just not smart enough to understand.
So that, like, using that analogy, you know, yeah. Are you a Bevo fanboy who will defend him at all costs, or are you starting to waver? Like, where are you on the fanatic scale?
I want to believe.
Right.
I want to be able to say to people that Bevo is right and that Bevo knows what he's talking about.
So you're talking about selection issues. You're talking about, like, drafting, all this kind of stuff. Like, you want to believe across the board, or is there specific issues that you want to believe in?
I mean, I think they are the two most obvious ones, yeah. Right, at the moment. It seems very weird from the outside that we, with the structure of the team that we have, like particularly with the tools, that you're not playing one of those tools down in the back line, because we have a problem in the back line with the tall. It seems obvious that it would be Aaron Norton, but at least up the ground for Aaron Norton. With Jamara like blossoming into, like, you know, could be one of the all-time great footballers. Mm. Like that, Darcy looks like he's going to be a forward. It just doesn't make any sense that he seems to refuse to want to play Aaron Norton in the back line, like, or, you know, like, or at least consistently higher up the field. That's very confusing. All this, yeah, all the old Australians who seem to be struggling for selection seems to be confusing when they're being replaced by Bevo has a real soft spot for somebody else that another team has rejected that he thinks he can make into an AFL footballer. And he's a real Bevo loves a rescue dog.
Yeah.
I bet Bevo's never got a dog from a breeder, right? Dogs from a breeder, he makes go and like work on a farm so they know what it's like, you know, whereas he'll just rescue any mutt from the corner of the road and go, you can play AFL football. I believe in you. And it just seems that he is much more willing to give, yes, the people who have never had the opportunity the benefit of the doubt when sometimes maybe they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt, and that he won't extend that same benefit of the doubt to the ones who are, you know, considered to be the upper echelon, more skilled players. There seems to be a disconnect in that.
Mm. I don't know how much you can reveal, but as a Western Bulldogs power broker, have there been any, has there been any sort of jungle drums?
So in 1 week from today, literally 1 week from today, as we record this, I am going to my first proper Bulldogs coterie dinner, and the coach and the president and, you know, some of the other, you know, kind of key power brokers are meant to be at this dinner. And my first coterie dinner with the coach and the president is going to go. Even if I don't say anything, there's going to be like 20 or 30 other people in that room who've just joined a coterie group.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, that could be like, we might have some explosive stuff to talk about here.
And
on,
it's a, two guys and it's like a Thursday that. Night game too, which means that you've had 2 days to stew on
by
it.
Monday. Oh, yeah, by Monday. Yeah.
No, but I mean by the coterie meeting. That's on a Saturday, did you say?
No, it's on the Monday. Like, I'm literally like 1 week
yeah,
from
that's even worse. Yeah. Lots of days to fucking think about it. There's nothing worse than losing a Thursday night game.
Oh, yeah, ruined the whole weekend. So, yeah, it could be a lot. But I like to think that at the moment I'm still a Bevo believer.
Yeah.
But I'm just worried, you know? Mm. Like, my number one thing at the moment is we've got to show enough at the very least that Jamara resigns. Mm. Because if we lost Jamara, then things would genuinely, I think, I mean, he's going to be one of those, you know, once in a generation footballers, I think. And we need to be able to hold on to him.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's like you've got these shiny toys. In like everyone agrees, like I don't think anyone believes it's the best list going around anymore, but there's still enough kind of like gems, like you can build a side from the players you do have, whether or not Bevo is the guy. I'm kind of like you, like I'm a loyalist, and I think, you know, if you had to exit him, you want it at least to be in a respectful way. Like, it's not ugly, it's not messy, you know, it's done in a way where, like, okay, it didn't work out, but we owe you everything because we got that flag and, you know, a second grand final appearance. But it's an emotional game and, you know, fans get angry and, you know, clubs get jumpy, and you just hope that no matter what happens, whether they re-sign him or they can get out of this hole or whatever, that it's just done in a way that doesn't, like, denigrate the legacy or the great things he's achieved.
I just think, and he won't, because he's Bevo and this is what he's like, and for good or for ill, that's what he's like. But he could do himself some favours by just playing all the best players in their best positions for a few weeks in a row, you know, and just to see if that works. Because if that didn't work either, then he could just say to people, well, I did what you wanted me to do. Everyone, like, is playing in their best positions and here's what happened. But just for the fans, just once, just for kicks, for funsies, why don't you pick the best 20-odd players in the team and then just pick them all in their best positions for this week.
Yeah.
Don't think about the future or anything else. Let's just see how good this team is right now with everyone playing in their best positions. And then that can be our marker. Because I think that's part of the problem with the Bulldogs is nobody knows if they're a good, bad, or indifferent team, because you see the parts of the Bulldogs and you think, oh, yeah, well, that looks pretty good. But you don't ever see the whole in the right positions. And I just, like, give us a couple of weeks of them all just playing in their right positions, you know, and if it's, then we'll get a realistic assessment of where the list is actually at.
I mean, are we ignoring the most obvious link between the Bulldogs drop in form, which is Bevo's veneers? Like, things seem to have fallen off a cliff since he got his teeth done.
I mean,
oh, I don't know how much longer we could ignore it. I mean, I can't ignore it when I'm watching the games.
I don't want to bring it up because I'm going to have to see him in person in a week, but it's clearly the problem. Like,
it would be very disconcerting if you're a player when the coach is, like, you know, giving you some very important information and you can see your face reflected in his teeth.
I haven't taken anything in for 2 years. Not taken one thing in. Like, he keeps referring to the whiteboard and they think they're staring at the whiteboard, but it's just his teeth.
Yeah.
And they can't see any plans. No wonder they're not following the plan. They can't see it.
I mean, strobe lights can trigger epilepsy. Maybe the, like, him talking and his white teeth flashing like that are just causing some kind of, like, cognitive issue for the players.
It's why the Bulldogs often get jumped by teams in the first 5 minutes of each quarter, because their eyes are still readjusting.
Yeah, that's right. From the glare. Let's move on to the Giants and the Saints. I settled in to watch this game. Iona, she was quite keen to watch a bit of footy with Dad, and I was like, "Oh, cool." I said, "Well, the Saints are playing the Giants," and she got, like, as soon as I said the name Giants, she's like, "Oh, like, are they Giants?" And I was like, "Oh no!" And so I played her the Giants theme song on YouTube.
Oh yeah,
and dude, instant convert. Yeah. Like, I've played that song to her, like, I reckon 20 times this last weekend, because she just loves it. And they're very, I mean, the Giants are just the fucking masters of marketing across the board. And so when you go to YouTube and you type in GWS theme, it's an animated cartoon of a giant coming out and singing the Giants song. So it's like crack for a kid. She's just like, this is the team I want to follow. It's a cartoon giant who sings this, like, jaunty kind of, like, song. It's so excited. I mean, I'm not even kidding. I had to play it to her. We drove to the pool yesterday and I think we listened to it 3 times on the way there, and we listened to it, like, at least the entire way. It was on loop on the way back, so probably 5 times on the way back. And to be honest, I don't hate it. Like, it's a fucking good song. I'm happy to listen to it.
I'd be fine to listen to it. Now, how do you feel about the idea that if she adopted the Giants as her team? Because we talked about the idea that, you know, you live near, you know, maybe the Gold Coast could have been the team.
I mean, they're still on the table because she loves the colours of gold and red.
I mean, I think this question honestly applies to both the Giants and the Gold Coast based on where they are at the moment. But say, you know, by the time she's 18 – One of her two teams that she's adopted has, like, 3 or 4 premierships, and the Saints still don't have another premiership. Would you be happy that she'd chosen a path that had more success, or would you hope that she'd, like, stay with a, you know, dear old dad in this, yeah, in this world of St Kilda disappointment.
I mean, it's funny, like, because Gemma is like adamant that she doesn't follow St Kilda. Like, she's seen what it's done to me, and she's like, you can't want that for your daughter. And I am still holding on to the fact that it's just the way I was raised. There was no choice in my home. You couldn't just fucking pick and choose a team. You were Saints or not. Like, I'm starting to realize the world doesn't work like my very insular fucking family work. Like, if I had known, Will, if I had known that I could have picked another team, things would have been so different. But it's just not working. Like, I'm not selling her on the Saints. Like, I got my membership pack. I gave her all the stickers that the Saints sent me. You know, I've showed her like heaps of videos. I've explained. I've shown her the color. It's just not, doesn't appeal to her. She just doesn't have any. Like, I guess the Saint is a bit of it's an odd mascot. Like, even the Cats, you know, she's much more interested in supporting the Cats because of the mascot. My niece is the same. Like, her mum's Saints, her dad is Tigers, but she wanted to be a Cat supporter because she likes cats. So it makes, I think I'm really on a hiding to nothing. I can't win her across with our song. I can't win her across with our mascot. Definitely can't win her across with the way we play.
Performances on the field.
Jesus Christ. She watched that goddamn garbage on the weekend. It was, it was a 1-point loss in the end, but that is as bad as I think we have played. Well, maybe last week against Richmond, the first half. That was, we've got some concerns down at the Saints, and I think the major problem is we have no skill. Like, it's stunning. The kind of game we want to play, which is that high pressure, get in your face, you know, which is great. But the problem is when you play a high pressure game, that pressure comes back on you and you need to be able to execute. So when you're trying to pick off that corridor kick or whatever, you got to hit it. And we can't, not only can we not hit the corridor kick, we can't hit a fucking handball under no pressure in the back line. Like, the amount, I think at one point before we did our run in the last quarter, the Giants had scored 57 points from turnover. Like, we had given them 10 goals almost. That's an insane number. You are not going to win any games if you're letting your opponents kick 10 goals.
Well, you nearly did win the game though.
Yes.
Like, I mean.
Because I think the Giants literally were like, let's bench all our good players. There's 8 minutes to go. And we can score quickly. I mean, the interesting thing is Max King goes off with a knee issue. And all of a sudden our forward line functions really well. We're looking at new options.
So, how do you feel about that?
I mean, I think you've got to consider it, right? Like, his ability is what his potential, I should say, is obviously huge. What he can do, but maybe we're not exploiting what he can do. Maybe we get too conscious about like, oh, we've got this giant guy in the forward line, and so we look for him too much. Maybe he's got to play more of a Charlie Dixon role, more of a selfless thing. It's like, okay. If you're in the wrong position, the problem for Max is that I think the way he presents on the field is he looks disinterested a lot and petulant, you know, like he tends to play for free kicks, you know, he gets into wrestles. And I think Saints fans, we just want to see like a hungry kid who's just desperate. Like, we have our debutant Hugo Garcia come on, and within like, you know, a quarter and a half, he has 7 tackles, 11 possessions, 6 contested, 3 clearances. And that's what you want, right, from like young players. Max is still only 23. But I don't know. I'm not one of these people who will like drop him or whatever. I think that there's a place for him. But I just don't know if he's either being deployed properly or the game plan isn't suiting him or the fact that our midfielders can't hit a fucking target. You know, like, he might be doing all the right things and we just can't hit him.
We'll have him at the Bulldogs because we need another tall player is what we need at the Bulldogs. So we'll give you Caleb Daniel and Bailey Dale, and we'll play Max King in the forward line as well.
Well, I mean, who would we take from the Bulldogs? Like, who? I was going to say like Bailey Smith, but he can't really hit a target either. Like,
no.
And you got rid
of. No.
Maybe, what about McRae? He can't get a game, can he?
Nah, you can have McRae if you like.
Is he good? Is he skillful?
Yeah, he's.
He can't just give us McRae for King. We need a little. A little sweetener on top. We'll take
Okay. You can have McRae
and Norton.
He's an all Australian McRae.
Can we have McRae and Norton?
Yeah. Shut up.
No.
What are you talking about?
You hate Norton.
No, I love Norton. I just think he's playing in the wrong position.
Yeah, right. All right, we'll take McRae and Rory Robb.
You can have McRae, and you can have a Rory Lobb. Yeah. We'll pay you to take Rory Lobb. If you take Rory Lobb, yeah, you know what? Just take Rory Lobb.
There was an incident in the game, which I think if you're a Saints fan, this to me just sums up what it's like to not just this game, but just the Saints experience in total, which is, you know, we're down by like 4 goals, but we've got a bit of momentum. And Machito Owens takes an absolute screamer in the back line and like gets the crowd up and about. Then he turns to chip it back inboard, kicks it over the head of Josh Battle, straight into the arms of Jesse Hogan, kicks a goal. And it's like within the space of 10 seconds, you've seen something absolutely amazing and exciting, and this could be something to bang, oh, no, we suck again. This is no good.
But what is the best – so, look, it's hard, I think, when you're where the Saints are at, right, because – I think that they have a really good coach, and clearly they've kind of punched above their weight, like in skill level a little bit, because of the coaching and the sort of buy-in on the idea. But that can, as we know, get you into a little bit of trouble, that if you don't have the players to implement the plan, but you end up keep finishing in these sort of positions that are somewhere between 6th and 10th, you do yourself out of that opportunity to top up your list with the, you know, the top end talent that you actually need to take it to the next level.
Well, the thing is, like, we have slowly accumulated quite a significant injury list. Like, if you actually look at the players we've got missing, we're missing sort of 5 of our starting 22. And one of those players is Liam Henry, who was a top 10 draft pick, you know, for Freo. We got him over this year. And in his first 2 games before he got injured, he was that, like, midfielder we've been looking for. Elite skills, super quick, can kick goals. So I don't think we're a million miles off it. I just think we are going through a patch at the moment.
But I guess what I was asking is it better for the Saints to have a season where you end up finishing 10th or 11th or 12th or something
lower.
This season to get...
lower. Down. Keep going lower. Well, it depends if fucking the Kangaroos are going to get another bunch of priority picks. I mean, what the fuck do you do there? Like that, we knew it wasn't going to be good, but with West Coast winning, it just, I think, reinforces how dire the situation is. Like, where's their... They need a good story to come out of this season, and it's just not feeling like it at the moment.
I mean, I guess it's one of those things with North Melbourne where all the experts before the season were saying, yes, they've got a skilled midfield and some skilled young forwards, but they don't have a back line, and it is impossible to play this modern game without a proper back line. And it turns out that in this case, in this rare case, Charlie, the pundits were correct.
Yeah.
It turns out it's almost impossible, because I had a little bit of hope that North Melbourne were going to improve, that they were going to go up the ladder. But it just shows that, yes, even with all those young guns and that future potential, they do not have the depth on their list to rise up the ladder at the moment. They still need more help.
Yeah. I mean, and it's funny too, because you look at Sheasel's first 5 games, like 30-plus touches in every game, but... So on the surface, you're like, well, that's amazing. But then you're like, well, why is he getting so much of the ball? Like, why are they giving it to him at every opportunity? Because they've got no one else who can distribute like that out of the back line. So, yeah, it's, I mean, tough times being a North supporter. Like, I know we've got letters coming up, and there is a North supporter's like, guys, give me something. And I don't know what to say, because it's been a while since the Saints have been – I mean, we've been mediocre for a long time, but we haven't been like so bad like that for 20 years, 30 years.
I mean, there's so much upside to North. That's the thing. Like, they also have a lot of potential. You know what? I think it's time to start lobbying. Maybe this is what I do next week. I've got a week to get this together, but maybe I just start lobbying for a North Melbourne Bulldogs merger.
Oh, the North Melbourne Bulldogs? No, how do you do that? The Western Kangaroos?
I mean, look, North Melbourne's like slight. I mean, it's barely.
The Northwest.
I mean, the Northwest Melbourne Bulldogs.
I wonder, like, what, yeah, I mean, maybe. They sort of have like similar kind of cultures, right? Like proud working class.
I mean,
clubs.
We're just adding some red to a blue and white jumper. Like, I mean, I think it'd be a reason, like, you know. Like maybe our mascot becomes sort of half bulldog, half kangaroo.
Some kind of cryptid, some kind of monstrous hybrid.
I'm just in that
a
way
bullaroo.
That you just want to pick the eyes out of, I mean, the best of their talent would be really lovely to have at the Bulldogs if we could just come in and say, you know, take North Melbourne's best eight players at that Bevo could then refuse to play in their positions.
Well, I don't think he'll have to merge. I think LDU comes out of contract. I think he's like a restricted free agent at the end of this year. I'm not sure if he's re-signed.
But it's not going to help North Melbourne if suddenly those guys start getting picked off by other clubs.
No, but it'll help the Bulldogs if you can get LDU. Although your issue's not midfielders, is it?
I mean, yes, I think it is actually. Right. I think our issue is midfielders because, as it showed on the weekend, if people can shut down Liberatore and Bontempelli, then the Bulldogs are absolutely no good.
Yeah, and what about Libba too? That was an odd bit of vision to come out of the game. Like he says it was just a tweaked ankle, but
I know, but that seems unlikely from, you know.
The way he fell, yeah.
The way he fell, because normally if you tweak your ankle, it doesn't stop you from using your hands to protect your head as you fall into the ground.
Yeah, yeah, hopefully he's okay. So that's a bit of Dylan Robinson vibes about it, that. You remember when Dylan Robinson had that, like, heart issue with the Saints?
And he just he's out this week against the Saints, yeah. So they're giving him a week off regardless. He's passed all the concussion protocols, although if you've ever heard Libba talk, I reckon it'd be hard to get a real – real beat on what the concussion protocols are at the best of times. The standard questions might not actually apply when it came to Libba. But they put him into the protocol anyway out of safety, which I think is absolutely the right thing to do.
Mm.
But so he's going to be out for the week regardless. And without him playing in the middle for the Bulldogs, and, you know, Bontempelli's clearly a little bit injured. And, yeah, it's tough for the Dogs. This might be one of the worst games of – this might be the worst Two Guys, One Cup the history of us doing this podcast, I reckon, because both our teams, I don't think either of them are particularly good at the moment.
No, and also, like, they – in terms of this round as well, like, they're calling it – Nick Malthouse has called it, like, the round – what do you call it? Like, it's the hard – the 50-50 round. Because every matchup is like hard to pick.
And ours is the 50-50 game because we've both got about 50% of our best players to pick from.
That's right. And then, of course, the Suns beat the Hawks. More cheeky Jack chat. Are you getting a bit over the cheeky Jack thing? Like, does it feel a bit manufactured at this point now?
I mean, just there's plenty of times when, like, decisions don't go one way or the other in a game of football. And I think I'm now a bit more in the opinion of, he gets some, he doesn't get some. It's like, yeah, it's just going to be how it is. It is really boring, I think.
Yeah. That's all we'll say about that game. Sorry, Suns fans. We're running out of time.
The Suns are great. They're going really great.
Yeah.
You should be happy if you're a Suns fan.
They're in the eight.
Hawthorne are terrible.
Yeah.
It turns out. Like, really terrible in a way that I did not expect Hawthorn to again be terrible.
But so if you believe Joey, the final eight is set. And Suns fans, you're in there. You're in eighth. So congratulations. Okay. Start celebrating. I'm sure it's not too early. Even though Brisbane and Collingwood are still on the outside. Okay, I'm going to put my glasses on because I'm going to read.
All right.
So if you want to get in touch with this.
That was the worst.
I've got headphones on.
That was like someone who's never put glasses. On. It was like you were doing a comedy bit that you could not have done a worse job of putting on your glasses just there. Particularly as you announced it, I'm going to put my glasses on, and then just slammed your glasses against your face in a manner. Like, has this man never put glasses on before?
If you want to send us a message, you can. We're at Two Guys, One Cup AFL on Instagram and Twitter, or you can mail us in, like our Western Australian listeners, Two Guys, One Cup AFL at Gmail. This is from Instagram. From Yazoo24, do you share the same feelings as before for GWS now that they've knocked off the Saints? Still a massive Giants fan. Like, I can't not love them. Like, even when they were picking us apart, like, how can you not admire that team, like what they do on the field and off the field and on their social media? Everything about them is pretty amazing.
And their song.
And their song. Such a good song. Also, the first part of this question, this is from The Creed. Charlie to do a Karen Kingy impression of his first crack. It's almost a spinal injury crap. Yeah, okay. There's a clip of Kingy going on about, what do you say? We're trying to protect the head. Or protect a brown lie. I'm sick of it. I sent it to Broden. I'm like, we've got work to do on our impression. I think he was making a fairly good point, though. Like, I think, you know, those two incidents where, so who got off? It was Butters got off, right? Where he had his hands on the ball and went in hips first. But for all intents and purposes, if you protect it, you've got to protect the head, Will. I don't want to talk. I'm sick of talking about it. I think King Yedipo. I'm not going to go Kingy because I want him to come on the show at some point. Also need a Will and Charlie impression of the photo at some point. Okay, so I posted a photo of a shirtless Charlie Dixon and Chad Corns. Will not be recreating. Adzi, what is the best team you can put together based on the quality of a player's haircuts? Who's got the best haircut going around
in the AFL? Best haircut in the AFL. Does it? It's got to be like one that is distinctive, right?
Yeah, I can't think of. There's not any. I mean, I keep thinking of like I go back to Geelong and the headbands because it seems to be the most trend sort of in because there's so many of them, like the blonde hair with the white headband.
Is there anyone who's doing something particularly individual or different this season? Is there like someone who's
What about that dude who plays? Is it Poulter who plays for you guys? Yeah. And he had the long stringy mullet. Is that still happening? I don't know. Is he in the seniors?
Yeah, he might be one of those aforementioned players that I talked about who one of Bevo strays. Just because we're called the Bulldogs doesn't mean you have to rescue dogs, mate.
Keeg says, you guys should learn who Brady Hoff is. He's a gun player at the West Coast, not named Harley. Okay, well, it's our Western Australian episode, so Brady Hoff.
Okay. How do I spell Hoff?
H-O-U-G-H. Brady, like the Brady Bunch.
H-O-U-G-H, okay. Brady Hoff, AFL, okay. Let's see what I can find out about.
It's a very AFL player name, Brady Hoff. Like it doesn't sound like it should be a name, but it is.
Yeah, Brady Hoff. I'd never even heard of Brady Hoff, but it turns out he's an AFL player for the West Coast. Oh, my God.
Is this a joke?
No. You've just – I shouldn't – it's very mean, but you've just got to Google the West Coast Eagles page of Brady Hoff on your computer at the moment because he is just a funny-looking fella. The picture of him on their front page is – He's got like a big set of ears. He's got some very wispy mustache that he's operating.
He's got a bit of Brett Hedy going on with the big jaggy ears and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I hope he's a good footballer because he ain't winning no beauty contest.
Yeah, but I'm up for Brady Hoff. I'm just based on this photo alone, I'm willing to get on board.
Neagle says, save the date for Gather Around 2025. Can you guys do a live Two Guys, One Cup pod in South Australia? Yeah, we're talking about it maybe.
It would be so good to the hardest thing to know, because I was thinking about this because we talked to Broden about the idea as well, is when would you do whatever it is that you would do? Because the idea is you want to capture the where people are there and in town and there for Gather Round. But there are so many Gather Round events and games already on. When would be the ideal time, do you think, to do a podcast?
Is the week after Gather Round, once everyone's left. We'll come in and scoop up the scraps.
But is it one of those things where you'd have to do a late – do you do kind of pitch a late night show, like, you know, sort of an 11 o'clock at the Rhino Room Wrap of the Day sort of event sort of style thing, or are you doing something during the day because people are looking for, like, something to do in the afternoon? I think the only problem is there's so much stuff already on. Where would you fit in the podcast?
But I also think it's too, like, who are we attracting? Like, you know, I don't want to speak for the footy, but, you know, I think with our form of entertainment, we're not wanting – hardcore footy fans, I think they'd come to our show and go, what the fuck is this? I thought it was football-themed entertainment.
I mean, I agree. We're looking for a very small percentage of the fans, but if they're in Adelaide for Gather Round, they're still there to probably gather around. And you would like to, you know, capture some of that, I would have thought.
Bedirk says, I want Will to have an on-air meltdown. Generational talent's being wasted at the Dogs at the moment.
Well, I mean... Bontempelli is the generational talent. Like, you're right. He's won a premiership. He's played in another grand final. I agree that it would be great to obviously see him play in another grand final in the time that we have him. Yes, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's the right thing to do. And then the other one that I think you could put into the generational talent is Jamara, right? I think Jamara, now you can see enough that he might be a generational talent as well. The rest of them are very good footballers. You know, as in like the other ones. But I don't think that there's any evidence if you're going to say generational talent. I think there's two footballers in the Bulldogs that you could say, okay, both of them look like generational talents. I absolutely agree with that. And then there are some others who fit into the being very, very good footballers. But I wouldn't say that Aaron Norton is a generational talent, or that even Sam Darcy at this stage is a generational talent.
On the Bulldogs, why does Waitman wear an arm sleeve from Nallon 99?
Didn't he? Doesn't he have a something elbow? He had elbow surgery and he's got like a hyperflex elbow or something.
Lastly, this is from Enjoy Yourself. Can we please go back to St Kilda just being shit all the time? It's the sense of hope that hurts the most. I mean, we are good at that. What hurts more, like a 1-point loss or a 10-goal loss? And I think that's the 1 point, because it's like, why can't we play like this all the time? You know what we did in the last quarter? Mm. Let's do that for an entire game. Let's see if we can do that. Let's see if we can open it up. I don't know.
It does also, though, rely on the opposition not trying for the entire game.
Yeah, so if we can work that out. All right, that is Two Guys, One Cup for this week. We'll be back again next week. Don't forget, you can check out some other great podcasts we do together in the Everyone Relax feed, where you found this very podcast. Will, you've got shows in Melbourne?
I do. 1 week left at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. My show is, I'm very happy with it. So if you would like to come out and have a good old time at the Comedy Theatre, you can catch that for one more week. It is called Will Legitimate, but then it'll be touring Sydney, Brisbane, Western Australia. We had a good Western Australia episode this summer, three shows in Perth. So, you know, come along to the shows. That'll be fun.
All right. That is Two Guys, One Cup. Play on, not 15.
Above.
We love our clubs, but they never win. Two flags in 100 years. That shit house, if you think we'll be insightful, clever, or just well researched. We're here to say that's not the case. We'll just go out and wing it. We are Two Guys, One Cup.
Listener.